In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Central Valley Sports Report here on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports on Blackstone and Sierra. Come on down here for all your sporting goods needs. First String Sports is awesome the way, they treat people. They welcome you at the door. Their big thing here is Letterman's jackets, and I love setting up here every Saturday from 10 to 12 in the, I call it the place to be, the Letterman's jacket room, where, you got all the schools listed here. You got all the samples of the jackets, Tulare Western, Kingsburg, Buchanan, Clovis North. Across the way, you could look at the patches. Come in here. They got a little monitor, and you can customize your Letterman's jacket, make it look however you want. So, yeah, come down to First String Sports. They have been gracious hosts and sponsors since the show started back in late August. It's already 2022, which is just crazy to think about. This is 1430 is the king of high school sports. We broadcasted two basketball games this week. We were at Selma for Kingsburg and Selma High boys. Kingsburg came away with an 11-point win. And last night, we broadcasted Clovis West and Buchanan girls. Clovis West came out with a win. We are happy to be the high school leaders in sports in the central section, and we love to talk about sports, and that's what this show's about. Players, I highlight the teams. I hopefully do a good job with my interviews. And speaking of interviews, we have a great show lined up for you today. Already here after the break, Jason Wahlberg is going to be talking about his experience at Clovis West and beyond. Jason was, of course, a part of those phenomenal Clovis West boys basketball teams, and he graduated in 2001. So in the late 1990s and in the early 2000s, played with his dad under his dad Vance Wahlberg, with Chris Hernandez and Tyrone Jackson, and just those great teams. And we talk about his run through high school and what that looked like and what it takes to be a Division I athlete. He played at St. Mary's, played at Fresno City College, and had a great run there. We'll get into a lot of fun stories, what it was like back in the day as far as the fans, getting into the game and the long lines and some of the great matchups and some of the players that he played against. So looking forward to talking to Jason Wahlberg coming up after the break. At the top of the hour, actually, we're going to bring him on for two segments. Yeah, I mean, there's not going to be enough time to talk about all the great basketball stories that he has in one segment. So I'm going to have him on for two segments. So looking forward to that immensely. Coming up at the top of the hour, we got a couple Buchanan wrestlers. We haven't talked about wrestling enough and how great and dominant wrestling is here in the Central Section. So I got two of the best in the state from Buchanan, the twins, Michael and Jack Geoffrey. They're coming in. They are our 1430 ESPN Student Athletes of the Week. These guys are studs, man. They're going to the University of Virginia. They've been wrestling on varsity since they were freshmen. They're well known throughout the state, obviously, but they're nationally ranked. So it's going to be a lot of fun getting to know them and what it takes to become a top-level wrestler. At the bottom of hour number two, we're talking with Bullard Athletic Director Brandon Gilbert. I've gotten to know Brandon over the last few months, and he's got a wealth of information. He's really involved, with a lot of decisions made at the CIF level and realignments with league. And if you guys didn't know, there's going to be new leagues next year. There was a proposal that was accepted last year, and starting this calendar year, next school year, there's going to be some new divisions in league. When we get into that, talking about what schools are moving where, some of the reasons why, some of the landscape of high school sports, what that looks like, with freshman sports too. Freshman sports, man, they're disappearing all over the place. And so I think there's a lot of factors because of that. We're going to explore that with Brandon Gilbert coming up at the 11:30 hour. Okay, a couple news and notes. Ross Wood is now the Buchanan head football coach. So we know that Matt Giordano stepped down a few months ago, kind of unexpectedly. And So that's a high-profile job. And so Ross Wood is being promoted from within. He was the offensive coordinator for the last couple of years under Matt Giordano. So I tweeted that out last night and got a lot of positive responses, man. A lot of people were excited about him. He's well-liked. He's well-respected. It's going to be an easy transition. They're not bringing anybody in from the outside, so it's going to be pretty smooth. He's on campus. He's credentialed. He knows the system. He knows the Buchanan way. So congratulations to Ross Wood for being named the new head coach at Buchanan. So there were going to be three new coaches in the track next year. Brandon Nagel of Clovis East was named last month. Clovis still has not named their new head coach, but we're thinking that it's going to be named this week. So Clovis High is going to be getting a new coach as well. A couple other news and notes. Buller coach Tim Admonson last night, they had a big home win over Madera, 73-29, and that was his 400th win. So congrats to Coach Admonson. He's, the Admonson name, like the Wahlberg name, the Admonson name is gold around him, around here. Tony is the coach at Clovis North, and Ty is doing an excellent job, the other Admonson brother, as a coach in Arizona. So he is the ninth coach in Central Section history to notch 400 wins, according to Central Section historian Bob Barnett. And speaking of Bob, I mentioned him last week as well. If you go to the CIF.centralsection.org website, you can look at Bob's milestones. There's a link there. You can check out all the cool milestones that have hit in basketball. You could go back to the archives and you could read about his football historical landmarks as well. And so Bob's coming in next week. I saw Bob at the Clovis West basketball game last week. And, oh, my gosh, what an amazing guy. If you want to know any stats in Central Section, Bob Barnett is your guy. Very excited for him to come in. And we're just going to talk basketball. We're going to talk records. We're going to talk the best teams he's ever seen. So really, really looking forward to having Bob on the show next week. All right, speaking of Clovis West as well, their boys and girls team just keep rolling. Absolutely rolling. The boys are currently ranked number 8 by Cal High Sports. They beat Buchanan last night by 24 points. They're 22-1. The girls team, they're ranked 11th. They've been ranked 11th for about a month. They're 16-3. They beat Buchanan last night by over 30. They played a national level schedule. So the girls are rolling. Those two teams, those two programs under Coach Wahlberg and Coach Craig Campbell they're tearing it up. They are, and they play back-to-back. So that was a lot of fun. There are a lot of people in the gym watching them play at the high level that they do. So St. Joe's, they are the number 2 ranked team in the Central Section right now. They played in Alaska. Yeah, Alaska. And they last night they beat the number 1 team in Colorado. So that was really, really, really impressive for St. Joe's. All right, I'm going to bring in Gabe Camarillo right now. Gabe and I, we love to talk about the rankings and where teams are at. And I know he was at the Clovis North and Central boys basketball game. And, I think we could probably call it an upset. Clovis North was ranked 4th. Central was ranked 10th coming into last night's game. And Central got the road win at the Stable Center there. So, Gabe, what did you see in that game? Were you a little bit surprised by that?
Yes and no. I know Central's a very good club. I've seen some of their results in tournament play. They had a good showing at the Damien Classic. They also showed well at the Hoover Holiday Classic. So they played pretty well in tournaments. But I do know what Clovis North is, and that is a team that beat Modesto Christian. And we were both at that game, so we both saw Clovis North at its best. This is a Clovis North team that pushed Clovis West, the same team we were just talking about, to triple overtime the couple of days after that Modesto Christian win. So I've seen Clovis North at its best, and to say that Central beat this team is a little bit surprising in that sense. But how Central beat them was not surprising. They have athletes on the floor. They have a pair of brothers, the Green brothers, Marquise Green and Marcus Green, that played extremely well. LaDainian Streets was clutch down the stretch. I mean, this was a game where Central led by 17, but Clovis North came back behind Connor Amundsen's 22 points in the second half and made it a close game. In fact, Clovis North led this one with a minute and a half remaining, but Central was able to get to the free throw line. LaDainian Streets made 5 of his last 6 free throw attempts, and Clovis North wasn't able to ever retake the lead after Amundsen gave it to them. So I do think this is a big win for Central. Definitely helps their seeding in D1. And I was just talking about it with a friend last night. If Central performs well in the rest of track, if they beat Clovis North again, and if they lose a close game to Clovis West, they might be the one or two seed in D1. They might have an argument to be right there at the top of D1. And what this means for Clovis North is now the discussion between them and Mount Whitney is even more close, because it already was close in the ratings between Clovis North number 4 and Mount Whitney number 5. But if Mount Whitney goes undefeated like I expect them to during the regular season, it's going to be hard to keep them out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So I'm looking at the Max Preps rankings, and that's what we go by as far as our Central Section playoffs. And, you know, the top four are in the open division, and then eight schools for Division One, and then 16 on two and below. So right now it's Clovis West, St. Joe's, San Joaquin Memorial, and then Clovis North. Again, this hasn't populated since last night. And then there's the Mount Whitney that you talked about. So right now they'd be the number one seed in D1. Then you have Dinuba, Bakersfield, and then Central. All right. So, yeah, so you're right, Gabe. If, you know, they're going to play one more time. They're going to be playing at Central. So if Central beats Clovis North could fall out of that open. Central could move up. You know, the strength of schedule, Mount Whitney's only at a 2.6. Dinuba's at a 4.2. Bakersfield Christian's at a 13.3. And Central's at 12.7. So, yeah, conceivably we could have, I don't know, somebody like a Bakersfield Christian or a Central sneak into that four slot in the open division. But yeah, isn't that really curious? Because the deal goes, so let's say Clovis North for some reason continues and stays at number 4, because they have a strength of schedule of 16.9, which is really, really high. And Central beats them twice, but for some reason Clovis North is the 4 and Central is the 5. CIF then, because of the head-to-head, can actually bump them up, right? Wouldn't that be really interesting if something like that happened?
You know, I wasn't going to go there, Paul. I stopped myself in the middle of my sentence because I was like, do I really want to say Central's an open division team? But since you went there, I'll go there. You're absolutely right. I actually think Central has a better chance at being an open division team than Bakersfield Christian. And in my opinion, if Central beats Clovis North again, they're much more deserving of it than a Mount Whitney or a Dinuba because of that strength of schedule you mentioned. Central's a 12, and Mount Whitney and Dinuba are a 4 or low numbers like that. So I can't see Central not being in the open division if they win out in league without, I mean, of course, Clovis West is a tough team to beat, and that'll be at Clovis West. So if they lose a close game to Clovis West while beating every other team on their remaining schedule, I think it's going to be hard to keep Central out of the open, but that's where they are right now.
Yeah, and then flipping to the girls' side for a little bit. So we talked about Clovis West. They're the clear-cut number 1. Then we got Bakersfield number 2, Napomo number 3, and St. Joe's number 4. So we got a couple coastal schools right there. And then there's Central. The Central girls are number 5, Liberty 6, Carruthers, you know, that big win against Clovis is 7, and then Buchanan is 8. Now, one of the curious things we've been talking about for a few weeks now, Gabe, is the curious case of San Joaquin Memorial girls, right? We know how talented they are. We know about, you know, Jackie White stepping down a couple weeks ago, so they have an interim coach right there. Yeah, and a lot of us were looking forward to San Joaquin Memorial in the open division and to see what they could do against Clovis West, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But, you know, a couple weeks ago, Gabe, too, San Joaquin Memorial girls were actually placed in D2. We figured, you know, they're going to, you know, do really well in the CMAC and they're going to move up. So there they are in D1. They're probably going to end up with a 4 or 5 seed in D1. But yeah, there's a lot of interesting names in the girls division too.
And I don't think those names will remain where they are after today, because you tweeted it out, Paul. There's a great showcase happening right now at Sierra Pacific High School with a lot of top girls basketball talent playing each other. Looking at some of the games, Sierra Pacific versus Central, San Joaquin Memorial versus Hanford, Hoover versus Kingsburg. These are just some of the games that are happening today at Sierra Pacific. I wanted to give them a shout out. And as you said in your tweet, Paul, this game could shake up a lot of the playoff standings because of the head-to-head and because of just the quality of matchups. I mean, just looking at Sierra Pacific versus Central, Sierra Pacific's not going to be an easy matchup for Central, so I could easily see the Grizzlies losing that matchup and they can fall from where they are right now. But as it stands right now, the hard part about projecting girls basketball is just Napomo and St. Joseph. We haven't seen them play. We hear a lot about them through Twitter, through Joe Bailey of Santa Maria Times. But until we see them on the court, I still think Clovis West is undoubtedly the team to beat.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Gabe. Good stuff as always. Appreciate you. Really quick, guys, again, Max Preps. Go to Max Preps. Just click on a team, then click on rankings and find the central section. You'll see that. You'll see all the rankings there. I think it will populate later today with the games from last night. You could also go to the CIFcentralsection.org website. You could click on divisional playoff placement for all sports, and CIF does a really good job on a nice PDF format where you can see all the rankings there. So go ahead and check that out. All right, coming up after the break here at First String Sports, Jason Wahlberg is going to be joining me. We're going to be talking about some of the good old glory days of Clovis West basketball, some of the great moments that he had as a player, some of the matchups, some of the future, you know, back then, the NBA guys that he was playing against, and talk about college, what it takes to be a D1 athlete. So thank you guys for tuning in. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited about this on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Central Valley Sports Report. Very, very good introduction right there. Jason Wahlberg, you heard him talking. We're talking about the glory days of Gonzaga, the kind of the start of Gonzaga's run when Jason was at St. Mary's. Jump, Jason, could you dunk back in the day?
In practice.
In practice?
Yeah.
You never got one in the game?
Never would try.
Never would try?
Not because
if you missed it, because if you missed it, what would happen?
Coming out.
You're coming out.
Yeah.
No questions
not
about it.
Not good enough to stay in there.
If you miss a dunk, you're not good enough to stay in there. That would. All right, Jason. So, Jason Wahlberg, Clovis West, 2001 grad. Was part of that incredible run that Clovis West had. He played for his dad, played for Vance, went on to Fresno City, toured up there. Was All-State, was a 20-point scorer. Just did a great job there and moved on. Played at St. Mary's, and I would go to games. I watched Jason and Chris and Tyrone play. I want to mention that I tweeted out that Tyrone Jackson was going to come on the show as well. We're going to swap some stories. Unfortunately, he's feeling a little under weather. So, Tyrone, hope you're listening, man. You're definitely a big part of that run. But, yeah, Jason, first of all, yeah, thanks for coming. This is going to be a lot of fun swapping some stories here.
For sure. Thanks for having me, Paul.
All right. So, 2001, that's when you graduated. And we were looking over our show notes together. And I put in there, the first question is like 20 years ago. You said, what? It's been 20 years? Does it seem like it's been 20 years since you've been in high school?
Yes.
Yes and no.
But no, like coming back and watching the team play and, watch my dad on the sidelines again, it definitely doesn't feel like it's been 21 years since, my senior year, let alone, 30 plus years, growing up there and going to the gym every day and, just being around the program all the time.
So you've been in Arizona for a while, and then you moved back from Fresno. When you would return back to the gym, when you'd come back and for a practice or a game every once in a while, when you would walk in, is there like a certain sense that you feel is like a smell? Did it feel like home? You're like, oh yeah, the bleachers there. I know exactly how the bleachers look and all that stuff.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, when I think of the gym, I just think of, I think most people think of the games and the air. I think of all the tears and the sweat, and the long practices and the grind. So all worth it. But a lot of times you come back and like, man, glad I'm not doing those 7-hour Saturday practices anymore.
And I mean, you grew up in the program, right? Yeah. Little Hoopsters and all that. So. I remember talking with Coach Craig Campbell, the girls' coach, about what's the reason for your success, and he would say little hoopsters, and I'm sure you can agree, right? Just how important was little hoopsters and just those Saturdays and just grinding it out? I mean, how important was that to the whole process of becoming not only a good basketball team but growing as individuals?
Oh, it's huge, right? Getting like used to a system, a program, who you're going to play with. After the elementary level at such a young age, helps you grow, right? It helps build chemistry. That's the biggest reason for the success. Everybody would say that is like just putting in the time at such a young age, and developing those competitive relationships.
So describe like okay. So when did When did the system start being implemented? Like third grade, fourth grade? Are you guys running traps at that age? Are you running down screens? Are you running dribbled? I mean, what are you doing at that age?
Yeah, so I think this story changes, I feel like, sometimes. But I feel like it started when I was in seventh or eighth grade. Because my dad had like a run of really good point guards coming up.
Okay.
And his thing was to try to, especially I think Ash Nolton was a junior or senior when Chris was going to be a freshman, trying to figure out how to get everybody on the court at the same time. And so that's when he started kind of going four out.
Okay.
And that was like our class and pretty much all the classes around it, you know, the class above us, it was just a lot of guards with not much size inside, mm-hmm. right? Size on the perimeter, but not really inside. So that's the whole reason why it came about, was to try to figure out how to put everybody on the court at the same time. Yeah, and then just kind of took off from there.
And so that then translated to your school teams and travel ball. Is that what that looked like? And you guys, like, Saturdays were part of travel ball as well, or the summers, right? Summers of travel ball and then school ball as well?
Yep, it translated everywhere. I mean, that's the thing about the AU program then. I know it's a lot different now, yeah. but, you know, it was run by pretty much your high school coach for the most part. And so, yeah, so we just – what they're implementing, we would implement, right, year-round, so –
And did you really, like growing up, were the high school kids then helping out as well, right? The high school kids helping out or not really that much then?
What do you mean? With
Little Hoopsters,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
then,
for sure.
Yeah, because then when you were in high school, then you'd come, you know, you play your Friday games, right? And then you'd come on a Saturday, then you'd help the little guys, right?
Oh, no question. Yep.
So when you were little, did you really look up? You're like, man, I can't wait to be a Golden Eagle, right? Do you look up to those guys?
For sure. Yeah, no question. I think if I had to say one person I looked up to, is probably Nathan Fast,
yeah.
for those that remember. But just in general, all of them. I love being around the game, the program, the players. So, I mean, when you're younger, all the kids really appreciate the varsity guys helping them out.
Yeah, so you talked about how –
especially when they're winning.
Of course, right? And it's probably very, very difficult. You know, you got a Friday loss. You got to get up the next morning and get back to that gym, right? But you didn't have that many losses,
yeah,
though.
I don't think that happened when we were there.
Okay, so I don't think I mentioned this in my opener. So in the 2 years that you were on varsity, two-time Valley champ, and what was it, 70 and 6?
Yes.
70 and 6?
I believe so.
Yeah, in the 2 years. Yeah, 70 and 6. So 31 and 3 your senior year, and then 39 and 3 in your junior year. So, yeah, you don't have a lot of losses.
No, and I believe, you know, they were all preseason and then in the state playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, you talk about the memories of that gym. So what are some of your greatest memories of being a Golden Eagle? Some of your greatest games? You talk about the blood, sweat, and tears, you know, probably losses hurt more than the big wins, right? So, yeah. So what are some of your greatest memories?
I mean, to me, I think if you ask any player that, they're going to say just being around the guys, right? Like the locker room and the day-to-day yeah. grind. Because practice, it wasn't easy, you know, playing for them. It's not easy now. It definitely wasn't easy then. And I'm sure people 10 years older than me would say it was worse then.
Yeah.
You know? But it was all worth it, right? Just going through that grind together. And then, of course, you know, we were fortunate enough to be successful enough where people wanted to come watch us play.
Yeah.
And then, you know, playing in front of packed house every night, no matter who was playing, was really cool.
What is the loudest you ever remember that gym getting, where you literally could not hear your teammates?
Probably Washington Union.
Really?
Remember that game was hyped up a little bit, and it was really – I think it was sold out like 3 hours before.
Yeah.
And it was close at half, and we came away in the third quarter, and it was just a crazy run. And I think, yeah, it just got out of control in the third quarter, the noise. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I went to a few games during that era as well, and the lines out the door were crazy. And I just remember, you know, during the tournament time and the fog, you know, kind of coming in, and lines were out to Teague Avenue. But, I mean, describe the atmosphere in some of those big-time games at the gym and, you know, the adrenaline that you guys had. I mean, just kind of give the people a sense of, like, what really was that like to play in an atmosphere like that?
It's hard to explain it. You know, you just kind of have to play in that kind of atmosphere, but it makes everything worth it. most people want to play in that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's what you work so hard for, is to get that opportunity to play against other good teams with everyone watching. We're just very fortunate, very blessed to have that every night, you know, and I honestly don't know how to explain that. Well, it's like one of those things that you just kind of have to experience, and there's nothing like it.
Did you just really have to focus in those games, or did you feed off the energy?
You would feed off the energy, but we honestly, like, we didn't. I mean, I'll speak for myself, but I know most of us just, you feel the energy, you notice it's going on, but then once the ball tips off, you don't notice anything.
Yeah.
You're just locked in.
Yeah.
I got more hyped up playing on the road.
Okay.
To be honest. That to me was a lot more, just gave me a bigger boost.
Yeah. Talking with Jason Wahlberg here. So, Jason, I one of my biggest memories is Tyson Chandler coming to town. I know you played against him a couple times, yes. Right? Tyson Chandler was a high draft pick by the Chicago Bulls, had a really nice NBA career. That was the time, you know, Kobe came out of high school early and you know, Kevin Garnett, guys were coming out early, and, you know, Tyson was going to be projected to be a top five pick. You guys were ranked number four in the state at one point. You played for Compton Dominguez. They were ranked number three. And you guys got the win, man, 65-61. You know, you guys pressured him. Tyson still had 17 points and 15 rebounds and 11 blocks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, so that was a Martin Luther King Jr. game, right?
That was the one in L.A. at LMU, I believe, right?
So okay.
There's two of them. We played them twice.
Correct.
Junior and senior year. So that one, I believe, was a senior year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So what's the question?
What do you remember about that game, man?
I remember a lot about that game. I remember, and this was common for us back then, was we'd go into a gym and we'd be ranked, you know, usually top 15 in the country or top 3-4 in the state. With, you know, the state was loaded, pretty loaded then, and people swear we were missing guys. You know,
yeah.
They're like, this can't be it.
Yeah.
This is definitely not the team. And you get that sense. If you looked at us versus Dominguez, I mean, they had more than Tyson Chandler. They had a lot of other – Bobby Jones was a 10-year NBA vet and a couple other guys. And in L.A., we grinded it out. I remember Chris being in foul trouble, which is, you know, dangerous for us because it's, you know, the best point guard, in my opinion, in the country at that time in high school. We just, you know, found a way to grind it out and get a huge win for us at that time, because I believe Dominguez ended up being national champs that year.
Yeah.
Number one in the country. Yeah.
So I want to explore that a little bit more, Jason. You guys come out in warm-ups, and like you say, you're like, what? This is Clovis West. No, man, that can't be Clovis West. There's some things that you heard, other things that you maybe heard from, you know, people in the stands or coaches, or like, really, that's Clovis West? And then once that ball's tipped, they're in for something, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we laugh at it because you just know, you expect to hear it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, just take it, and we will use that as motivation. I mean, we played with a chip on our shoulder all the time. I think that's what a lot of my dad's teams do, or he tries to get them to do. You know, he clearly has a chip on his shoulder, right? And so we would use that. I mean, we felt like our advantage was our competitiveness.
Is there something specific that you heard a player say once during a game? Like, man, you guys are wearing me out. Or, like, you guys slow down a little bit. Or you may ever say anything like that.
All the good things I can't say here.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you give us the edited version?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of it has to do with, you know, people, you know, saying it's more in the third quarter when we wear them down. It's
yeah.
Like, man, now I see it.
Yeah.
You know, it's more like that. Now I get it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I didn't understand. I was like, no way, but. Yes.
Well, one of the games I saw, your modern day game, played at the Forum, right?
Yes.
The modern day, you guys lost. But I think was it DJ Strawberry? Was it Strawberry's nephew?
Yes,
was on that team.
Yeah,
and
Darryl,
I think, Daryl Strawberry's nephew. I think he had a quote after the game. Is like, I had to look out there during the game once because I thought they were literally playing with six players.
Yeah.
Right, he thought that because the you know, the trapping and the help defense and all that stuff and just the nonstop, he felt like there were six guys out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we did, right? I mean, we were to play at that level, you have to pretty much, you know, wear people down, play a lot harder than them, and we're used to doing that, right? Games were easy for us because we're used to 4-hour grinding practices where, you know, we're fighting with each other all the time, and Once it came game time, we knew to compete with those teams, like, that's where we have to make the difference.
Yeah. All right. Talking with Jason Wahlberg. We got to take a break. We're coming back. We're not done with this conversation. We're going to talk a little bit more about the practices, what that grind was like, you know, what Division I basketball was like, and a bunch of other cool stuff here on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
Sports Report starts now.
The Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Meadows, here with Jason Wahlberg, talking Clovis West basketball. Back in the days, those great teams that they had, the atmosphere, the gym, playing for his dad. All right, Jason, so we explored a little bit about how tough practices were. So you talk about four-hour practices. So you're just like, hey, games aren't that big of a deal. Shoot, we've been here before, man. Right? So describe a typical Clovis West basketball practice. Did you want to quit the game a couple times?
Yeah, I mean, I went, you know, that's not in me. I know you're joking. it would get under your skin, especially because, you know, he's not easy to, you know, play for. You don't realize that at the time, right?
And yeah.
So, when you're the coach's son coming in, and he's already tough on people as it is, right? They're usually one way or the other. And there was days he would, you know, he was isolating me, picking on me on purpose.
Yeah.
And so those days I definitely wanted to kick a ball into the ceiling or, you know, do something more. But, yeah, they were very tough. Honestly, it was the biggest thing. The reason why it was so tough is because we are all so competitive. And honestly, practices were harder than most games because we were, especially like my junior year, even my senior year, like we were really deep. So a 5-on-5 where we split teams evenly and we're grinding it out, you know, they were battles. So by the time, you know, Wednesday or Friday rolled around, it was nothing, you know.
How tight were you guys off the court as well?
Really tight, yeah. And that's something I noticed, like, later on in Division One, or, you know, even, you know, my brief time, like, coaching, it's rare to have that, right? And you can only really get that in high school because you grow up together.
Yeah.
You know, and once people go to college, you know, you got a bunch of different guys from a bunch of different communities with different backgrounds, and they don't know anything about one another, and they might be there 1 year, 2 years. It's impossible to build that kind of chemistry. And so the tightness definitely we were really tight, but that's, you know, it's also part of what made us, I think, really good.
Yeah. So you have that great experience at Clovis West, and then, you know, your dad jumps to Fresno City, and then you guys follow, right? You and Tyrone follow.
Yes.
What was that transition like? I mean, obviously you guys had great success there. You lost in the state finals your freshman year, and you mentioned off air how you had that, you know, that your toughest loss in your junior college career at home in the semifinals your sophomore year. But yeah, how was it playing at Fresno City for your dad? And was the transition really, really easy?
Transition was easy. Junior college there's a lot of really good athletes. It's a lot of Division I athletes, guys that are either don't have the grades, or they're just kind of too small physically, right, at the next level. And so that was the biggest transition, was it's a whole nother level of athleticism, you know. And so, but as far as – and the court's bigger, which made it harder to press and, like, run. You know, you realize that when you got time runs at the end of practice.
Yeah.
Like, wait, this is does not seem the same. but for me, it was easy, right? I just been around it so long. Tyrone the same way.
Yeah.
He's been around it forever. So as far as like the system and how it translates, easy. Getting used to the competition, a little more difficult for sure.
And then, like, your game really improved though. Let's right. You,
yeah.
So I mean, you
I
were probably about, yeah, you yeah. got a little stronger, a little bit bigger,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So what, high school, you were maybe about a 13, 14 point guy, 15?
Not even. No.
Okay.
I think I was like 7 my junior year.
Really? Okay.
Like 12 my senior year, but, you know, we didn't play a lot.
Well, Chris Hernandez, I mean, obviously we know Chris. I mean, he was probably only about a 16-point guy himself.
Yeah, him and Tyrone,
too.
Both, yeah.
Right?
And they led us in scoring, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that you're not talking about your 23, 24-point scores. You're talking about pretty even across the board.
Yeah. I mean, we never looked at it like that because we knew, you know, what matters is what you do in the big games.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of games we just played then where we knew we're coming out with 6 minutes left in the third, and that was just the deal.
Yeah.
Right? And we're okay with it.
So why did your game jump up? Obviously, physically, you said, but, I mean, you became a 20-point scorer in junior college and then got a D1 scholarship. So, I mean, how were you able to take off just those hours of gym and just your knowledge of the game, just everything just kind of culminated to the player that you became, right?
Yeah, a lot of a lot of good coaching. And I put a lot of time in. And also got, like, I mean, the biggest thing was I just got a lot bigger, stronger, faster. And you have to – I don't care how skilled you are at those levels, you know, junior college, and then anywhere you go after that, you just physically – you have to be at a certain level or you can't play. And I think that just really was the biggest difference for me.
And then you get to St. Mary's in D1. What is something that – and you guys made the NCAA tournament that year, right? Mm-hmm. I want to ask this question first, though. What's something about being a Division I athlete that most people – don't understand, like the grind, the academics, you know, everyone's, you know, more physical than you and all those different things. What's something people don't understand?
I think the biggest problem, and I was even guilty of this, is just being patient. I think there's a transition. It looks easy on TV.
Yeah,
it does. And people are so much bigger, faster, right? Like, it's the wear and tear of, you know, most of us aren't going to the college level and getting, you know, 15 shots a game, right? There's very few of those people.
Yeah.
It's your, everyone's a role player, and, you know, the physicality of having to defend guys that are 40, 50 pounds heavier and a little faster, right? Like, it just wears on you. It really does wear on you. But the best advice I can give is just keep working and stay patient. It'll come for sure.
Yeah.
Especially for the young guys. 'Cause it's hard. It's, you don't see many freshmen. And I wasn't a freshman when I came in, but, like Cole Anderson, for example,
yeah.
Right? And Cole's a great player, and I think he's going to be an all-league guy, no question at all. But he's not playing as much right now, right?
Yeah.
And he dominated the Valley the last few years. And it's hard. There's not many freshmen that are playing on winning teams in Division I level. They're just not.
Yeah.
Yeah, patience and keep working.
That's a good word, patience. All right, so you get your college degrees, got a master's degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you jump into coaching. You're like, hey, I like this coaching thing. And so your dad was good friends with Coach Calipari,
yes.
Right? John Calipari, yes. So you had that connection. So after you got your college degrees, what was next?
I started working for Cal at Memphis. So I left early. Like March, I'd say, in 2008 to go to Memphis and started working. Well, maybe it was after that, because it was after the NCAA tournament when they lost in the championship. And I went there and started, you know, grinding for him. Lived with him for like the first 4 or 5 months. You know, just going to the gym in the morning and staying at night, doing all the dirty work, you know, starting back at the bottom. I remember my first job was cleaning out Derrick Rose's room, you know. And it's just – and it's weird because you're an athlete, right? Or you think you are.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
And then, because that level is a whole nother level.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And they get there, and I'm like, man, I'm 25, and I'm cleaning out this 19-year-old kid's room, you know? So, like, it's an ego hit at the time.
Yeah.
But, it's like, you know, I look back, and it's a really cool experience.
Yeah, Derrick Rose, you've turned out to be a decent player, decent athleticism.
Incredible.
Gosh. So then you move on to Kentucky.
Yes.
Right? So you're sticking with Cal. I want to ask you a little bit about your dad's relationship with Coach Calipari. I know it's pretty well known that, you know, the dribble drive and Calipari loved it. Hey, there's this junior college coach out there that's, you know, just got this crazy innovation. I'm gonna take it. So they've definitely struck up a nice friendship that's today, right?
For sure, yeah. Looking back at it, I give a lot of credit to Cal. I mean, my dad, every year he would go watch a different college, right, and try to speak to the coaches, try to learn a little more, try to implement something new. And he got a chance to speak to Cal. You know, some coaches let you talk to him, some don't. Just depends on the day and who it is. And, like, he was instantly intrigued by, like, what he had to say about, you know, his team and how he would, you know, run, which is – something he doesn't get much probably is people pushing back on him or saying, I think you're doing this wrong, when he's a Hall of Fame coach, you know?
Yeah.
and so, they really struck it, you know, a great relationship, and things really took off I know for Cal from there.
It was Derrick Rose, right?
It's
opening up, let him do his thing.
And what
right?
I mean by that is not because like Cal needed, a dad for his career at all. But what it helped him with at that time was recruiting, in the sense that it's a pitch to, hey, you can come here. Look at this offense we're running. It's fun. It's fast. You don't have to learn. You know, it's about learning concepts. You don't have to remember plays. And so that's a lot more fun for kids.
Yeah.
And so I think that's how he utilized it the best.
If you guys ever want to read the Sports Illustrated article that mentions Vance and Calipari, just Google Vance Wahlberg, John Calipari, and Sports Illustrated, and that article will come up. And, moving the salt and pepper shakers around,
yeah,
right? That
yeah.
story. Yeah, this is innovative. Yeah, show me this. Or sugar packets or something like that, right? So that's a great story. So then you moved to Kentucky, a couple decent freshmen, right, that you had firsthand witnesses
There's a lot,
to.
Yeah.
DeMarcus Cousins,
yes.
right? John Wall.
Yeah.
Just what was that atmosphere like?
Wild.
Wildcats.
just Lexington is the atmosphere I remember more than those guys. Like, looking back, that was an incredibly special class, right? Just incredible talent. Some of the most talented. Like, you didn't even mention Eric Bledsoe, probably the best athlete I've ever seen.
Wow.
And John, just a freak of nature, and same with DeMarcus, what they could do at that age, and just it was more the energy from Lexington when they came in, and it's impossible to understand how big of a basketball community that state and that place is until you're there and in it, because it's like nothing I've ever seen in my life and will never see again, because it's basketball really is all that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking with Jason Wahlberg. Jason, but I got to ask you, is there something – I think you talked to my good friend, Dr. Jay Pope, who's a huge Kentucky fan, and you guys had a really good conversation. I remember, was there some crazy dunk that John Wall had, some left-handed dunk that just blew everybody away?
Yeah, I did. It was at Indiana.
Yeah.
And they were in a little run, and I just remember he got an outlet at – it was less the dunk and more if he got an outlet at the free throw line, in the backcourt, and it was two dribbles, maybe it was a third dribble, I think it was two dribbles and two long steps, and he just flushed it left-handed, with someone pretty much on their head. Well, what most people didn't know though at that time, because it was a ridiculous play, it was one of the best college plays I've seen, but he dunks left-handed.
That's
normal for him. So most people didn't know that,
because they
hadn't really seen him in transition do that. I mean, we all had, but it did. It was one of the more memorable plays.
I think it was a right. I mean, right foot, left hand.
Yeah, right.
Or like
foot,
he was
hand.
Left-handed, yes. But he shoots right-handed.
Yeah, I'm just
right.
Just
right
a hand-handed. Ridiculous freaking nature athlete.
So, what about that atmosphere as well, and Kentucky, and just being around just high level basketball players, high level IQ with Calipari. I mean, did that just was that just a great experience for you? Well, I mean, what is the best way to just describe that whole experience, just being around that? I mean, you did a little bit just as far as Kentucky's just immersed with basketball, but expand on that a little bit more. Just love to hear more stories.
So many stories about that place. Where do you want me? If you can
well,
ask me a specific question.
Okay, is there a specific game? Is there another specific game that you remember?
Yeah, probably Louisville at home. That one, North Carolina at home, was also a big one. I mean, the biggest thing to take away, just honestly, is the day-to-day business aspect at that level, right? It is a business, right? These are kids that every one of them has a chance to make a living, a career, and never work another job playing basketball. And these coaches, they are paid very well to have winning teams, especially at Kentucky. And just kind of the pressure and the overall, going to events, speaking, there's way more non-basketball stuff to do than basketball.
Yeah.
Right. At that level.
So, us Azure fans, we check our, we just check our phones. Hey, what game's on tonight? Right. And we just tune into a game, but there's so much more. And that's Division I. That's not even the pro level. Right?
Yes.
So it's Division I college and just the day-to-day and the business aspect of it as well.
It's just – it's wild what just kind of like what you learn and see there too. Everything's about getting to the next level too for the players. Yeah. And I think that's why now a lot of mid majors and lower ones can compete. Cause I just think those guys, you kind of know, you know, like, I mean, when I was the same areas, like, I didn't think I was going pro or anything like that. Right. And there's a lot of guys like that, you know, this is your last chance, you get together, you and it's hard for a head coach at that level to get, you know, 10, 4 and 5 star guys that have always been by far the best player on the court.
Yeah.
And now some of these guys are shooting 2 times a game. Some aren't even playing. And so getting guys to buy in that are going to be there for 1 or 2 years and then to do it again every year, it is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
Incredibly difficult.
How incredibly difficult is it to get into the coaching ranks, right? So you gave it a shot. Did you just decide, it's not for me?
I knew somebody.
Yeah. You knew Cal.
Yeah.
Oh, the connection.
Yeah. I had a connection, the other way.
Did you just decide, this grind is too much, I want to get into,
honestly,
a different field or what?
Yeah, like just, you know, for me it was, I didn't love it, you know. I loved Kentucky, I loved the atmosphere, I loved being around basketball, I loved the locker room. But like just that aspect of it, maybe it was like moving from place to place each year, like I really didn't have like the passion to be a coach. And like I wanted to, like, to be a great coach, you have to be like all in. Like these guys are putting 18-hour days in.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, my dad's still, even at Coast West, he's going to the gym at 5:30, coming home at 11. Right. I mean, and so you have to be a great teacher and you have to be put in a ton of time. And then, you know.
And
being
and
around
hope,
it from
it
2 years
out.
Old. Yeah, exactly. Being around it from 2 years old, I just really didn't, you know, maybe it was burnout or whatever, but I just didn't see myself, you know, doing that.
Yeah. All right, Jason, we only got about a minute here. This has been a great conversation with Jason Warburg. All right, so really quick, just to summarize. So then your dad goes, you know, does the college coaching as well and gets into the NBA. Yeah. You know, I did that big article on him in the paper in 2016 when he was with the Sacramento Kings, and we were talking a lot about the Clovis West stuff. And then – right? And then we all know then you got let go by the Kings, and then now he's back at Clovis West. Did you ever think in your wildest dreams when your dad left that, you know, and you're wearing Clovis West gear here and you're back in town and you're watching games too, that now life has kind of come full circle for the Wahlbergs?
No, I would not have guessed it. Yeah, but honestly, I think it was a great move because this is – like his passion is like teaching and being a head coach, you know, and – that grind to get there, as fun as the NBA is and how elite those guys are, I think like he's best and happiest definitely being a head coach and running a program and seeing the young kids grow and succeed for sure. And they're starting, I mean, and they've been doing it.
They're rolling. It's year five, right? And they're back to the Hustling Eagles ways and back to when you guys were packing out the gym. So, Jason, this has just been a lot of fun going down memory lane with you and sharing your stories and sharing your experiences. So, really appreciate you coming. A lot of fun.
Appreciate it, Paul. Thank you.
You bet. All right, coming up after the break, we talking wrestling, high school realignment, all kinds of fun stuff here on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report. I am your host, Paul Metters, here on 1430 ESPN. Just had a great conversation with Jason Wahlberg, Clovis West basketball, you know, what it takes to be a D1 guy, just some of the great memories that he has playing for his father, just how tough that grind is as well. So, just that definitely wasn't a one-segment interview with Jason. I was happy to have him for 2 segments. So I hope you guys enjoy that. Here at First String Sports, This is where I've hosted the show since the beginning. This is show number 23. And, come on down here, First String Sports. Saturday is always a big day for them. You see people coming in, getting their Letterman's jackets, getting them fitted, designing them. So this is just a great room. And I'm just very thankful and grateful to First String Sports for hosting and being very accommodating to me. So come on down here, Blackstone and Sierra. All right, now's the fun time for our 1430 ESPN Student Athletes of the Week. Yep, and I said plural. Athletes of the Week. They got a couple brothers here, twins, right?
Yep. My name is Jack Joffrey. We wrestle at Buchanan, And I'm Michael Joffrey, and I also wrestle at Buchanan.
And I need to give more wrestling love, man. So, you know, obviously, you know, the show's geared around football and basketball, and then baseball and softball coming up. And I've mentioned Buchanan wrestling in the past. And, you know, when I wrote for the Clovis Roundup, obviously, you know, Buchanan dominates again. Buchanan dominates again. So are you guys up to six? Is it six straight state championships?
Counting last year, since we had like the COVID year, I think this year will be our going for seventh.
Going
for six.
Well, this
or
will
seven.
Be our seventh total state title, but this will be our sixth in a row.
Okay. All right. Got it. So there's seniors. We're going to University of Virginia, right? After this, we're going to be getting to that a little bit. So Jack is currently number one in the state at 132, and Michael number two at 138. So it's pretty cool. The timing was right for you guys to come in on a Saturday, right? You guys got Saturday off?
Yep. This week was like our first week off in about a month and a half. We've been pretty busy with competitions, duels. Every week we've had the Doc B was 2 weekends ago, Five Counties, the Zinkin Classic. We've had tournaments pretty much every weekend for the past month. So
it was great timing. So let's go back to Wednesday. Wednesday was a pretty big deal, right? Guys had the big one, they call it, the duel with Clovis High. So what, you know, guys are seniors, so you wrestled in it as a freshman and a sophomore. Last year was the stinking COVID year, right? There's other words to describe that, but you know, you guys, this whole season was wiped out, right?
Yep.
Last year
taken
away from you guys. So for people out there, how do you describe, what's the best way to describe that event? The student section is unbelievable. They all got these glow sticks. The lights are off. Obviously, you know, there's just one match at a time, right, in the center. There's no other distractions out there. So, Jack, I'll start with you. What, I mean, just describe that experience.
It's electric. There's nothing like it. You won't find a duel like that for wrestling in anywhere in the state of California, let alone the country. I mean, the school district or Buchanan, Clovis, we put on something that colleges have hard times putting on unless they're larger colleges for wrestling. Even this year, we were limited to 500 spectators.
Yeah.
And it's still the gym still feels packed, and it's just, the atmosphere is crazy. The lowest year we had before this year was actually 1,500 people. So this year only having, I think we probably had about 750 people in there.
Yeah.
So it was half capacity, and it was still, you could feel it.
It was wild.
Yeah.
Right. Michael, what's the experience like for you?
Yeah, it's always a fun event. This year was my first year actually wrestling in it.
Okay.
I mean, I would have wrestled in it last year, but yeah, COVID. But yeah, it's always a fun event. I mean, the crowd's just awesome, and it's just special to compete in with like the crowd on your side and cheering for you.
If you guys haven't been to one of these duel events, just me personally, I was blown away when I saw my first one. What I love about it is like, okay, so let's say one match is over. Guys are going off the mat, and then boom, the next guys are ready, right? There's no messing around. There's no, you know, 5 minute delay or 5 minute wait. Yeah, I mean, you got to be ready. So what's that like, you know, when you got your opponent on the other side, right, coming out of their, you know, their cougar or whatever they're coming out of, right? And then there's smoke and the lights are off. When you guys are right there and the spotlight's on you and you guys are jazzed up, what's the best way to describe that adrenaline feeling?
You're just running straight off adrenaline. That's it. Like, that's all you're feeling. I don't think much, I swear. Like, when you're out there, you're it feels like 2 seconds. It's on and off the mat. You wrestle your guy and then you're off, and next thing you know, you're cheering for your teammate. So, I mean, it's a great feeling to have. I mean, that's the only place you're going to get it is Doc B Finals, the Clovis High Duel, and State. I feel like those are the biggest spotlights we get.
Yeah.
So those are pretty intense feelings, and they're just great feelings to have.
Yeah, Michael?
Yeah, for sure. Like, the energy's super high, but I don't know. I just try to focus on the match and just block it out a little bit for my match, and then, I don't know, just try to compete to the best of my ability.
Well, I think, Jack, you hit on a little bit, like, do some of these high-level matches, do they just go by super, super fast? First of all, how long, for the people out there that are listening, how long are the periods?
Okay, so a high school wrestling match is 2 minutes the first period, 2 minutes the second period, and then 2 minutes the third period. And then if it's tied up by the third period, we have an overtime round. It's 1 minute, first one to get takedown wins it. Then if that goes without a score, then you have ride outs, which are 30 seconds, and then after that, it's one ultimate ride out. So typically a high school match is going to be 6 minutes. So.
What's college?
College is 3 minutes the first period and then 2-2.
Okay.
And then
all right.
Same, overtime okay. rules.
I want to ask you this question. I should have asked you before we got into wrestling stuff. But what is the craziest way that somebody has mispronounced your last name?
See, I saw that question.
Has there been sometimes? Because my last name's Meters, but I've been called Meters, Meadors, all kinds
always,
of different stuff.
There's always people like saying weird pronunciations of her name, but I never like listen to it fully. Because whenever I hear it, it's just like, all right, whatever. Whatever you said, like, it's Joffrey, but.
Yeah, yeah.
I always tune it out. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. Probably like Jioffer or something. Giraffe.
Yeah, giraffe, something there's like that,
some,
right?
There's some been some pretty weird ways people said it, but.
Maybe
yeah.
try a French accent or something like that.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, wrestling's a tough gig, man. I mean, I'm just amazed every time I see a high-level wrestling match. So, what is the toughest? Jack, we'll start with you. What is the toughest wrestling match you've ever been a part of?
I've had some tough ones. Doc B has by far always been like the toughest tournament for us. I'd say my freshman year, I was like ranked ninth at the tournament or seeded ninth, and I ended up beating like the number four kid. That was a tough match. And then my semis match the next morning, because it's a two-day tournament, I had like the kid was ranked in the country and I wasn't supposed to beat him, and I beat him. It was crazy. I was getting my arm ripped off. My coach Gabe at the time had to fight the call off. It was just crazy, but I ended up winning that match, and it was a close match, obviously. It was a pretty crazy match, and I had to fight the whole time for it.
Jack, is there a, you know, just had a great conversation with Jason Wahlberg, a basketball guy. Obviously in football there's a lot of smack talk, right? Is there a lot of smack talk in wrestling, or is it you guys just all business out there?
I feel like wrestlers, I mean, it's just handled – everything gets handled on the mat. There's no – I mean, if you want smack talk, people can. But I feel like, for the most part, I've never really heard anybody smack talk, like, all towards right. me. It's just go out and wrestle your match. Like, you'll know by the end of the match.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah.
How about off the mat, Michael? Like, when you see dudes that you're going to wrestle, what's the wrestling, you know, protocol like? Are you cool with the guy? You talk with the guy before a match that you know you're going to wrestle, or after the guy? What usually happens
with
that?
Not usually before the match, but, like, yeah, we're like, pretty friendly with everybody. I mean, on the mat's obviously business, but after, I mean, I'm friends with, like, a lot of guys that wrestle. So, I don't know. I just worry about the match, and, I don't know, I'm friends with both the guys off the mat.
Yeah. All right, so what are the top three? Obviously, you guys are high-level wrestlers, right? You guys got college scholarships. You guys have been grinding since you were kids. But what do you think are the top three? You could go five. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Top three characteristics of what makes a top-level wrestler.
Okay. I'd say discipline is for sure number one. People don't realize wrestling. Like, nobody will ever understand the battle of cutting weight. And that's just all discipline, all mental, like, toughness right there. I mean, mental toughness is another characteristic, I'd say. You're getting your head ripped off in a match or in practice, and you're getting down on yourself. It's tough sometimes. You just got to tough through it. You don't want to be there every day sometimes. it gets hard during the season. You know, it's a long season. So I'd say mental toughness, discipline, and, I don't know, focus or work ethic. You know, you gotta come every day with your best foot forward, and you just got to be ready to grind, basically. I'd say that's like those are the top three characteristics, I'd say.
You agree, Michael? You got any you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would agree with that mostly. I'm just like consistency and just enjoying it. I mean, those are like pretty big things.
Is enjoying it difficult?
You gotta learn to enjoy the pain. Yeah,
enjoy the pain.
It's a different type of enjoyment, but you gotta learn to love it. Yeah.
All right. So, how much do wrestlers punish their body? You're talking about cutting weight and how you got to take care of your body and the injuries and just the pain that you go through.
I mean, people that have to cut weight in high school or in college for wrestling, just in general, that's like almost half the battle. Cutting weight, I swear. It's nobody will understand unless you're a wrestler, the pain of having to like starve yourself, not drink water. You go a day or two without water, like, or very little water, your body's, you're feeling it. You know? And then you have to go out and compete feeling like that. And then, I mean, you're getting your arms ripped off, like, kids are putting you in arm bars, snapping your head. It's just a battle, so your body's taking a beating.
But you're doing that to other people, though, too.
No, yeah. But, I mean, it's back and forth, obviously. We're giving it more than we're taking it. But,
exactly.
It's taxing on your body. It is.
Taxing. Okay, so let's say you're wrestling against a dude that's comparable in every way possible. Mm-hmm. What advantage are you having to look to in a top level match to get over that kid? Let's say you guys are even, mm-hmm. evenly matched across the board. How do you try to gain an advantage?
It's a chess game. I'd say, I mean, not getting in their head necessarily, but just you're trying to break the guy every time. Every match, you're just trying to go out there and break him. Whether that's tire him out before you tire out, pulling on him. I mean, you're just trying to put up points, score points on them. So breaking the guy is, like, the most important if you're even. If it's an even matchup, you're going to have to figure out how to get up on them and be able to break them down to where you're able to score.
Yeah.
If you want to win the matches.
Michael, you agree with that? I mean, just the mentality, you got to, when you're facing off against the guy, you go like, all right, I got to be better than you. I got to be the dude.
Yeah, in those matches, it's like you're almost competing against yourself in those, like, type of matches because they're, like, evenly matched. So, you know, it's like those 50-50 matches. You're going to have to find it if you want to win those matches.
Yeah. It's something I want to explore a little bit with you guys. Like, are you, when you're wrestling against somebody, sometimes you might, do you know – not know sometimes before you go out there who even you're going to wrestle? Like, sometimes they'll replace the number 4 ranked guy with, like, the 13th guy.
Well, I mean, at dual meets, sometimes they can change up their lineup, so you won't know exactly who you're wrestling. But for tournaments, you can see bracket, whatever. I don't pay much attention to it. You just go out and wrestle the next guy. But, I mean, for the most part, if you want to know, you can find out who you're wrestling in the bracket at the tournaments. But yeah, you'll know. They won't switch it up, or they can't.
How much preparation? Let's say you know. Let's say it's a tournament. Like, oh yeah, I've seen this dude wrestle. Is there, you know, think about basketball, baseball again. I'm going to team sports, but you know, you got a scouting report on certain teams or certain players. Are there scouting reports on other guys? Or so, are you just wrestling?
So
you
I feel like everybody's different for wrestling. For me, I mean, I'll look at the guy. There's different wrestling styles. You'll look at a guy's body type, and you'll know if he's long, he's gonna cradle you, or they're gonna go for cradles. Like, those are just basic judgment. But for me personally, I don't like overthinking it. I don't like looking too much into what they do, because I want to go out there and wrestle my style and do what like I'm best at. Because if I overthink it, I'll change my style.
Yeah.
And I'll change how I wrestle. I know he's different, probably.
No, yeah, I agree with that mostly. I mean, if they have like one big thing that they do or like an obvious trait, then I might like take that into factor a little bit. But I try not to worry about it too much and just wrestle my style. So, yeah.
Talking here with Michael and Jack Geoffrey about Buchanan wrestling, what it takes to be a high-level wrestler. All right, so you have an older brother that wrestles as well, right?
Yeah.
Is wrestling in your family? Is your dad a wrestler? Your mom athletes? Or what's the deal with this? You guys are laughing already.
So, somehow he got us into wrestling. I'm not sure. I mean, he wrestled in high school. Our dad did, but nothing serious at all. He probably wrestled a couple years in high school.
Yeah.
Wasn't very good.
I think he just fell in love with it in high school, and it was, like, maybe a little too late for him in high school, and then – he really enjoyed the sport and just got us into it.
He was like, oh, I got 3 boys, so we can retry this. They're
gonna,
let's get them in it.
They're going to wrestle anyway around the house, right? Might as well, you know, try to make a career out of this. All right, so growing up, Geoffrey. All right, so you guys got some moments where you guys would tussle in the living room and break stuff. And
all the time.
Right? So
all the
you got
time.
Some stories?
I mean, we used to have a wrestling mat in our garage, so we'd get in a fight, and then next thing you know, we'd be out in the garage.
Yeah.
Cradling each other, throwing hands, you know, we'd beat each other up all the time, but it was all fun and games, you know, just being brothers.
Yeah, but nothing, we never really got into any serious fights, like, growing up, so.
Just brother stuff.
Yeah, all right.
Brotherly love. Yeah.
All right, so when did you guys, start, like, as, like, little tykes, like, 4 years old, 5, 7, 8, when did you guys start?
We started, I think, at, like, 6 years old, so, yeah, pretty young, at a program in Modesto called Central Catholic. That's where we first started out. And ever since then, we've just been taking it pretty serious.
We started when we were 4, and we moved around a lot. We started at Central Catholic, like you mentioned. And, I mean, my dad, he turned into a crazy wrestling dad somehow. I don't know. but he would take us everywhere. Everywhere where there was wrestling, we'd go. Different high schools to practice, different tournaments.
Yeah.
We were there ever since we were, like, 4.
Okay.
It was just nonstop.
Was there a time where you guys are like, hey, we're pretty good at this wrestling thing? Was there a match where you just dominated a kid, maybe made a kid cry or something like? You're like, hey, these kids are pretty good.
For us,
yeah. You guys, was there a moment you're like, hey, yeah, okay, yeah, we're pretty good?
I don't know. I never really got that feeling. I mean, to be honest, we weren't like the best youth wrestler. I mean, we weren't terrible. We knew how to wrestle. But we weren't the best youth wrestlers out there. Like,
yeah.
We wouldn't go out and dominate every tournament. We'd win tournaments, obviously. Like, we knew how to wrestle and go out and compete. But I feel like coming into high school was where I really matured as a wrestler and, like, changed. That's when I, like, that's where I made my biggest leaps and bounds in wrestling is coming into Troy's arms, and he took us far, he took us pretty far in the sport. He changed us.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that, Michael. So how has Coach Tirapelli and his staff, how have they just elevated your wrestling to the next level?
I mean, it's helped so much. So where we came from Ripon. We had, like, a lot of coaches that were, like, helped us a lot, but there's nothing like the sport at Buchanan.
Yeah.
I mean, Troy doesn't even get, like, I mean, he gets paid the stipend for, like, the sport, but, like, the amount of work he does is just insane, and the dedication he has is just crazy for us and our team.
Well, you know, Troy Tirapelli and Adam, you know, I mean, they're wrestling gold not only in the state, you know, the valley, the state, but also in the nation. They're,
yep.
you know, well known, but, you know, when you got a college, a guy's hugely successful in college, right? And Adam as well, just, they just live and breathe wrestling. But, you know, I follow them. I love talking to them whenever I have the opportunity, but they're truly just, I feel like they are very, very invested in just the improvement, right?
Yep.
Take you where you're at and make you better and get better every day. Right, Jack?
They love the sport. They love the kids. I mean, they're not there for any other reason besides they want to make kids better. They want to see kids improve, grow, no matter who the kid is either. They don't have to be the best kid, the worst kid,
yeah.
most talented, strongest, biggest. It doesn't matter. They're there for every single kid no matter what, and they're pushing each kid to get the best they can be. It's just great to see. It's something else.
Yeah, yeah. I see it. I see it across the board. I've only got a couple minutes, guys, already. So this year, what are your guys' individual goals for this year? Obviously, you guys are you know, on a path for another state championship as a team. But how about as a team and individually, Jack? What about you?
So coming into this year, I wanted to win Doc B. That was one of my first and main goals, is to get that cowboy hat. And it wasn't one of my goals at the beginning of the year, but it's starting to become one of my goals just to push myself a little bit more. I want to remain undefeated on the season.
What are you right now?
I don't know. I'm probably like 30.
Oh, that many?
25-0.
Okay.
I don't want to put too much pressure on that, because it's not the end of the world if I lose a match. You know?
Yeah.
Everybody loses. Everybody has bad days. So I'm not going to put too much pressure on myself to go undefeated, but that would be an icing on the cake if I could. And it just pushes me to get better in the room every day, knowing that, like, there's something behind me that I want to achieve. And then, obviously, the state title.
Yeah.
We're going for it, so, yeah.
Michael, what are your goals?
Yeah, going into the season, I definitely wanted to go undefeated too, but, I mean, I took some losses, but, I mean, they've only made me better, so I think it's good to take losses every now and then. I wanted to win Doc V, but I got second there. But it's all right, that's over with now, so I'm on to state. I want to win state.
Okay, good goals. All right, so Virginia. Why Virginia?
So we had a few other colleges talking to us. We took a couple of visits. You know, all the coaching staffs were great on the visits we took. But Virginia, there's just something about it. We both value schooling just as much as wrestling, if not a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And Virginia had both the best of both worlds with wrestling and the academics there. And when we got there, the coaches were just awesome. The assistant coaches there are actually twins.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. And then the head coach there is just great. Awesome guy. We love the teammates. Everything there, it just worked out great. And then when you get an offer that you can't reject, you're going to take everything you can. And Virginia had everything perfect for us.
That's great.
Besides the fact that it's super far, but I mean, that's no big deal. That only lasts. Homesickness only lasts.
Yeah, that's right.
For so long.
That's right.
You're there.
So Michael, you know, Jack mentioned that academics are really important. So yeah, I mean, so talk about that and what you guys want to study.
So Virginia, they have a really good business program there. So we'll probably go into that field, the business field. But he really likes business stuff, so we're definitely going to, you know, venture into that.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, this is a lot of fun. Michael and Jack Geoffrey, thank you guys for coming in. Wish you luck. I mean, Buchanan Wrestling has just been a dominant force, you know, over the last years, you know, and Clovis, obviously, before that. So,
yep.
Yeah, thank you guys for coming in. It's a lot of fun. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
All right, you bet. All right, coming up after the break, Brandon Gilbert. Bullard High School athletic director, going to be talking about realignment, landscape of sports, maybe a little bit of baseball card talk, huh? All the bunch of fun stuff coming up after the break on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Meadows, here on 1430 ESPN. Here with Bullard Athletic Director Brandon Gilbert. Brandon, what was your style of music? What kind of music did you grow up? I mean, class of 91 from Bullard, right?
Yeah.
You're a little bit of a child of the 80s, right?
Yes,
so you,
definitely.
Maybe some hair metal. What were your jams? Some rap?
Definitely the hair metal. The rap and the new wave. All of it, definitely.
My go-to was like Def Leppard,
of course.
White Snake.
Yes, of course. Great stuff.
Yeah. What kind of car did you drive in high school?
I drove it was a 73 Dodge pickup, lifted with tires and the roll bar.
Yeah.
The KC lights that didn't work. They were just up there for looks.
Yeah.
Everybody back then, it was, it was what kind of off-road tires you had when you actually never drove them off-road.
Yeah.
But who had the best off-road tires to drive down the street and who had the highest lift kit on their truck
and
all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The mean streets of Browning Avenue right there. Yeah.
Yeah. You needed them to drive through the figs, right?
Drive through the figs, yeah.
Yeah.
I drove a 19, believe it or not, I graduated in 89. I drove a 1956 yellow Chevy.
Nice.
1953 on the tree, right?
Nice.
That's how you shifted right here.
Yeah.
I learned how to drive in a 1956 with the clutch, man. I had some interesting moments out there, and then you would learn how to drive that thing.
I bet.
All right, we're going to be talking about a few cool things here with Brandon. So I wanted to get into the realignments.
Mm-hmm.
So next year, a lot of people don't know that there's going to be some realignments coming in next year. So in 2022 through 2026, I see here. Talk about the CMAC. Obviously, you're the AD at Bullard, and so you're well aware of what's going on with the CMAC. But, yeah, what's this new alignment looking like?
Yeah, so for us, the CMAC as it is now and the NYL as it is now, I guess you could kind of call us sister leagues. And we do everything together. We meet together, and we do have some things that are different, but for the most part, we all meet together. And in this new re-leaguing, we're gonna have some new schools joining the group. We'll have Garza, which is the new high school in Central Unified. We'll have Torres, which is the new school out in Madera Unified. And we're going to have Sanger West, which is going to be competing next year. And they're the new school out in Sanger. And then Reedley's going to be leaving for what used to be the CSL. I see they've renamed the conference. So Reedley's going to be heading out. So basically what it's going to do is it's going to create a six-team CMAC with Bullard, Edison, Memorial, Sanger, Garza, and Madera. And then it'll create an eight-team NYL with all of the Fresno schools, Torres, Madera South, and Sanger West. So we'll be all under one big umbrella, and for the most part, we'll be divided into a six and an eight. But we do have some things that we're working on in our bylaws that would allow a school from the NYL to potentially compete in the CMAC for a two-year window. And if that occurs, then that would open up a spot potentially for a CMAC school to switch spots, if you will, and compete in the NYL for a two-year block.
Okay, so, yeah, so looking here, so eight schools, so Sanger West is going to be added. So let's just talk football then. So obviously you're just going to be playing. Is it going to be – so is McLean going to, maybe schedule a game with – looks like, with Garza or something like that. Is it going to be some crisscrossing?
Nothing that we've developed as a league. I mean, everybody's just kind of on their own to schedule their preseason. And obviously the CMAC, would be playing five league games because there's six of us. And the NYL will be playing seven league games.
Yeah.
So they'll be starting off a couple weeks early. So, they've got to find preseason games, I think, weeks one through three.
Yeah. All right, so looking at this, so you mentioned how Reedley's moving. It looks like it's going to be called the Tri-County Athletic Conference. That's going to have CVC, Exeter, Hanford West, Emmanuel, Kerman, Kingsburg, Reedley, Selma, Sierra Pacific, and Washington Union. And then there's a couple other big leagues. So Northwest Sequoia League over here. So Carruthers, Chowchilla, Fowler, Fresno Christian, Liberty, Madera, Minarets, Parlier, Riverdale, Sierra, Yosemite. And then there's an East Sequoia League. So do you think those are going to be like an upper tier and a lower tier? Do you think, is that what that's going to look like?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the focus of this realignment going forward was to make larger conferences, if you will, and let those schools maybe divide them up into two if they want, based on, you know, the needs of their schools and what they think's best. And so I think that was kind of the focus, is to, instead of having four team leagues or five team leagues, six, you know, let's just make them eight, or let's make them 10, and let's let the schools kind of decide if they want to split.
So, okay, so you mentioned that earlier, like, so is the CIF, are they the ones that decide which ones are going to be in the league, and then the league representatives decide, okay, who's going to be in the upper tier, who's going to be in the lower tier of some of these?
Yeah, the CIF takes proposals from all across the valley. And so the rule is anybody can submit a re-leaguing proposal. I mean, not now, it's too late now, but when the process started, you know, the rule was just if you're going to submit a re-leaguing proposal and you're going to make changes, you have to account for everybody involved. You can't just say, you know, I can't just say, well, I want to be in this league. Well, okay, that creates all kinds of dominoes all over the place. And so you have to account for all that. And then, you know, you have to talk to other ADs and kind of see what would be accepted and what people want to do. And so I think the CIF takes all of that. And there's meetings, you know, people speak on their school's behalf because not everyone's always happy where they're placed. And so I think the CIF just takes all that information in, and then they do, you know, what I think is a pretty good job of putting out a plan, and then it gets voted on and all that. You know, I know down in Bakersfield there's
yeah,
some pretty big changes.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got, I think they've split up into the three or four different leagues. And so, you know, it's hard because not, you know, you have a certain sport where a certain school might dominate in a
yeah.
league, and you know, there's just no way around it. And so you're trying to do what's best for the whole school in terms of athletics, all 24, whatever, you know, people have sports, and you're trying to find the best fit across the board.
Talking with Brandon Gilbert, the athletic director at Bullard. Yeah, that's one of the things that pops in my mind is like, okay, so you're moving in and you're making these leagues, and some schools are strong in some sports and some strong and, you know, really weak in other sports. How much of a factor and how frustrating is that for some schools? So let's say they got a great, you know, water sports program, right? But, you know, their football program is really terrible. Is that, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, isn't it?
It is. and if you look in college athletics, it's probably the same way. You know, and I think football gets most of the publicity, right? Because it's football and people, and if a team is maybe not competing in football, everyone thinks, well, they got to be moved. Well, hold on. Let's look at these other eight sports where they're first or second place in league. You know, it's as much as people want to say it's all about football, it's not. But you know, when people see a football team losing 50-7, they think, oh my gosh, they got to be in a different league. But you got to look at all of it, you know. And so I think that right there is why these larger conferences make sense, because now you have the ability to split by sport, you know. So if there's a real, for example, in our situation, and I'm going to use, you know, I'm going to use Hoover for an example, because right now they've got a really good basketball program.
Yeah.
Their boys are doing really well. And so if as a school they were to look at their program and say, you know what, yeah, we would love to go play in the CMAC for a couple years, they could do that. And so I think you're able to make things sometimes a little more competitive with these larger leagues and doing things by sport.
Do you think the timing is right for this realignment? When was the last time there was a big realignment? Maybe 4 years ago? Five?
Yeah, I think it's every 4 years.
Every four.
But I think the last four did not affect the CMAC or the NYL.
Or the track.
Or the track. And then, you know, now there's obviously new schools. And I know there'll be a new school, I think, in Clovis at some point.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hearing. And so there'll be a need to realign then as well.
So the ebbs and flows change a lot with programs, right? A lot depending on coaches, right? Some, you know, a new coach shows up at a school and, hey, within 3 years, they're dominating, which is great, right? Great for that school. So how do you think the ebbs and flows of just, you know, the dominance of programs and new programs rising, you know, programs getting better or getting, you know, worse for some reason? You know, how do those affect, you think, going into some of these proposals? Or do you think it's more proximity, size of school?
Proximity has a lot to do with
okay.
it. And you know, now – you know, with what we're all dealing with transportation is it's difficult. And getting our teams to and from games is getting harder and harder because of COVID and the lack of bus drivers and things like that. So, yeah, proximity is really important. So that's a major factor. And if you look, you don't see too many people in these leagues having to travel too far. I mean, in our league, I think the longest haul would obviously be, you know, one of the Madera schools having to go to Sanger, you know, but that's once a year.
Yeah.
Right. And in terms of ebbs and flows, you know, when you're dealing with public school athletics, it's really hard to keep a program at the top every single year. I mean, you have groups of kids that come in. You have kids that leave and go to other schools. You have kids come into your school, and neighborhoods age, and certain neighborhoods in your area may not be producing school age kids. It may be retirement type of folks, and then all of a sudden, a neighborhood flops, and now you've got, like, my neighborhood, for example. I live in the Bullard area. My neighborhood is loaded with 10, 11, 12-year-olds right now. You know, and so at some point, you know, in 4 or 5 years, those kids will hopefully be at Bullard, and that might cause a little ripple in our athletics. You don't know, but you know, that's the toughest thing with public schools is you know, those groups of kids, those cycles of kids, and how what sports they grow up playing, and maybe you've got, you know, 5, 6, 7 boys who grow up playing Little League baseball and Pop Warner football together, and they just keep doing it. That's a huge impact at a public school.
Yeah. And we saw that a lot, right? You these groups of kids, you know, we talked to Jason Wahlberg and how they played basketball since they were in first grade together, right? And they moved together, and that's just a special time. And ask Jason some of his best memories. It's those. It's the
Absolutely.
Community. It's the kids you played with. It's the meals. It's the, you know, playing Nintendo before or after games, you know, back Absolutely. In the day. Those kinds of things, right? Do you feel like that has been lost in the last few years? You know, talk about Tenaya was the big feeder and Baird now into Bullard. And you knew what kind of kids were you going to get on campus because you were invested in those kids and the coaches were communicating with each other. Do you feel like that's changed over the last, 5, 10 years?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, if we've got, you know, feeder-wise, you talked about Tenaya, right? And we've got kids that are playing sports at Tenaya. And, you know, it's not a given they're coming to Bullard. And there's a lot of different factors in that. But I think the biggest issue is, you know, when you and I played Little League Baseball, right, way back when, we played with Art in our neighborhood, and the whole neighborhood played Little League Baseball. And kids that are all different abilities played. So, you know, you may have a buddy who's in your class who's your neighbor, and maybe he's not the same ability as you, but it didn't matter. You all played in the same league, and the kids who maybe weren't as good, they competed because they wanted to be as good as their friends, and everybody played in that league. And, you know, now, unfortunately, those little leagues that you and I played in when we were kids, those are now kind of referred to as rec leagues. And kids are off doing other things. They're playing travel baseball, and they've got a swing coach, and they've got a pitching coach. And I'm not knocking these things, okay? You know, these are great. These are churning out some really good ball players. Don't get me wrong. And parents are ultimately going to do what's best for their kids, and that's a great thing. But I think it's thinning the herd a little bit. And I think what it's doing is the kids that have the means, right, either financial or just the parents have the wherewithal and the understanding of the system to get their kids involved in these outside things, you know, it's thinning the herd. And the kids that don't have those things are not playing. And they don't have that little league to get better, you know. And if I don't have the ability – and my neighbor down the street is, you know, in Little League, I guess, you know, throwing 60 miles an hour is pretty hard, I guess. So
yeah.
If he's throwing 60, you know, I got to figure out how to hit this guy.
Yeah.
Because I don't want it to be teased in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
where now that kid's probably not even competing against that kid, because that kid throwing 60 is probably off in Cooperstown or wherever, or playing in some high-level thing, which is great for his development.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. You know, so I don't know how to solve
that. No, I know. So basically, I think a lot of that has to say is like, hey, those days are gone, right? The days of just, you know, showing up to Little League, and throwing the ball around a little bit, and you know who's good, you know who's not very good, but there's a sense of community, and you loved it, and you went out and you competed, and you had fun. Like those days, I don't want to say innocence, but those days are kind of long gone, and it's become more competitive. I think it really changed. To be honest, I think it changed with baseball, the travel baseball, the love of just playing Little League and rec ball, like it's called now, is just gone. You got to be an elite. You got to have your $350 baseball bat, right? You got to travel here, because now if you don't, you're going to be left behind, aren't you?
100%. Yeah, 100%. And it's sad. It's a sad thing when you have a 10-year-old and maybe he's never played a sport before, and he says, "Dad, I want to play baseball." It's too late.
Yeah,
it's probably too late, unless he's just some great athlete, right? It is what it is, and we have to adapt. And I don't know what the solutions are. I really don't. I think large school districts, I think could help in solving the problem. Obviously, money's a factor and resources and all those things, but I think we're going to have to get to a spot where large school districts like ours are going to have to go into the travel sports and Little League baseball and softball business.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have to – I think subsidizing it is the only way we're going to get these kids playing again. Now that's going to cost an exorbitant amount of money, right? And it's going to probably – it would create a whole new staff of people that you'd have to employ. But if the goal is to truly get kids engaged and back out doing things, then – yeah, I think that's really the only way to solve the problem at this point.
Talking with Brandon Gilbert, athletic director at Bullard. So how have you seen that translate then to freshman teams? I know Bullard's got a freshman baseball team this year, finding games, what you're seeing across the board, even with girls basketball. My daughter's on the JV team at Bullard, and I wish she would have the freshman team, right? Get some, play against some kids more her age or her more developmental level. So what are you seeing in the landscape as far as that's concerned?
Definitely a drop off. I mean, it's been happening. This is my ninth year as athletic director, and so definitely has been dropping off a little bit every year, at our school and other schools. We freshmen for freshman soccer and freshman baseball and softball, we kind of have a cohort between us and the NYL and a few other schools. And I think there's 16 of us this year. And we just combine to make a freshman schedule because, we're going to take whoever has a team. And so I think last I checked, out of the 16 of us, I think there's going to probably be 6 baseball and 6 softball. And not necessarily the same 6 schools, right? You've got some of those one or the other.
Well, there's another transportation issue too, right?
Exactly, because we used to play those games. We would play freshman baseball and freshman softball at the same site on the same day, and they'd go on the same bus. And so, now we can't do that anymore. And I think freshman girls soccer, I think this year we might have had, I think we had 4 or 5 teams, maybe 6, I don't know. But I don't know the reason for that. I'm sure COVID didn't help. And I think kids didn't get to play in middle school. And so when they then came to high school the next year, it was hard for them to plug back in. So I think COVID had something to do with it. But I also think what we just talked about, the Little League stuff, I think that all factors in because those kids have stopped playing.
Yeah.
Freshman sports used to be the time where a kid who's never played football or never played this sport or that sport says, I'm going to give it a shot. And then there's always attrition between the freshman year and the next year. But usually we get plenty of freshmen. It's then sometimes we lose them after their freshman year to grades or just lack of interest. And then, you end up you don't cancel the JV team.
Yeah.
You just bring all the kids up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's, a lot of people are in that boat.
Yeah. I agree. All right, lots of issues there. We got about 3-4 minutes, so let's turn it into some fun stuff here.
Okay.
All right,
This is all fun.
Okay, it's good stuff. All right, so you've been athletic director. You're the defensive coordinator on a football team this year. You took over in game number 3, and I, your defense, it's a lot of your games, definitely improved a lot. You guys you went to a state championship. Who are some of the best athletes you've seen coaching out there? I know you talk about Jalen Green, right? San Joaquin Memorial. You knew he was going to be a dude, right? Are there some other athletes out there you're standing out like, oh, man, that kid's going to be great.
Put me on the spot.
I know, sorry.
Right now?
Yeah, and you recently.
Well, I will say this, and I just saw you got recognized with the Cal High Sports All-Junior Team. The running back at Bakersfield High is special. We played them in the section championship, and he had a long touchdown run against us, and
that was a man's run.
I think I rerun that thing about 8 to 10 times, and I wasn't angry at our defenders. I was just in awe of this run, and this kid's going to, I think, pick his college. I mean, this is one of the better running backs I've seen, and I didn't coach against the Buchanan kid, Milton, but I certainly watched him play, and he was really good too, don't get me wrong. This Bakersfield kid's special.
Yeah,
and he's really good.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah.
And when I mentioned too, Tom Donald has taken over the baseball program, and you guys got some Division I athletes. You got some really good players there as well.
Yeah, we got some.
Cam Schneider.
Yeah, he recently committed to Fresno State, and he's a junior, and we've got a few sophomores. And
yeah.
So yeah, we've got some guys, and I'm looking forward to the season. But I think Coach Donald will tell him the same thing as anybody would: you've committed to a school, but you still got to go out and get it done on the field, right?
Yeah.
And so commitments are great and all, but let's see it. Let's see it on the field, right? And these are great kids, and I expect good things from them. You know?
Yeah,
really good kids.
And baseball,
some of them played football, and some of them came out and played football this year, and it was great. We're definitely trying to get that baseball football pipeline going again at Bullard.
Yeah, baseball's going to be here before we know it, man. They're practicing. They're doing scrimmages already. Yeah. So, yeah, baseball games are going to be starting soon. All right, baseball cards. You and I have developed a little synergy talking about baseball cards. So what baseball cards has made a big resurgence, hasn't it? I mean, it's become a super big deal. You know, you go to Target, you see baseball cards on out there, and then they're gone the next day, right? So baseball cards are really hot. So, yeah, talk about your love of baseball cards really quick. What's cool about it?
Like everyone, when I was a kid, I collected them and would, ride my bike down to the store and pay a quarter or 50 cents for a pack, which I wish we could do now, right? And then I got back into it about 3 years ago. I think right before COVID, I got back into it, and unfortunately, I got hooked on it. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I guess, depending on how you look at it, right? But it was awesome during the COVID when everybody was shut down. It was a great hobby.
Yeah.
And I think, there's guys that look at it as a hobby, which I think you do because you're a collector.
Yeah.
I'm a collector. And then there's people that are doing it for investment purposes, and they're flipping it. And that's why, like you mentioned, you go and all the stuff gets bought up at Target. It's because everyone's flipping it on eBay.
Yeah.
And so that's the unfortunate part of it. But, it's still fun to collect and do all that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It takes our mind off some of the seriousness that high school sports has become, right?
Yeah,
some of that serious things.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Brandon. Brandon Gilbert, Bullard Athletic Director. A lot of fun talking. Appreciate talking to you. Appreciate our friendship.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. And just so you know, we appreciate, all this stuff. I mean, any attention you can bring to these kids who are out competing, all the time and putting all this time in. And, I overheard you talking to the two young men. That's awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, you bet. It's a lot of fun. All right. That's it. Show's over. We're going to be actually wrapping it up here after the break on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Carry on my wayward son signifies the end of 2 hours of talking high school sports here at First String Sports. I'm your host, Paul Meadors. You can follow me at Paul Meadors, PaulMeadors. You can follow 1430 ESPN as well on Twitter. I want to thank Gabe Camarillo back at home base for producing the show. Only got to talk to him a little bit about high school sports, but he does a great job. Make sure you follow Gabe as well. Again, think First String Sports. They do an incredible job here hosting the Central Valley Sports Report. Come down here on Blackstone Sierra and check them out. I want to thank Jason Wahlberg. I want to thank Jack and Michael Geoffrey. We just had a great conversation with Bullard Athletic Director Brandon Gilbert. Thank you guys for listening. We really love talking about high school sports, and we are happy to be the go-to. Do be passionate and leave it all in the court. Talk to you soon.
Your home for high school sports. 1430 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader. KFIG Fresno.